Please be seated. Would you pray with me? Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Over the past several weeks here at Old South, we've been in a sermon series about the parables, those tricky stories Jesus tells that rarely land with a clean ending, stories that resist easy meaning, stories that perhaps, as Justin said best just a few weeks ago, are simply confusing. So perhaps it is only fitting, only true Old South way to end a series on confusing stories from the parables with a story more confusing than the parables, that of the Transfiguration. Today is Transfiguration Sunday, which, if you did not grow up in church, is a formal way of saying that today is the day we as a community celebrate and think about an event from the Bible that went a little like this. Jesus gathers three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, and he takes them up a mountain, and then he essentially says to them, "Hey, you guys want to see something weird?" And then his face shines like the sun, and his clothes blaze white, and Moses and Elijah appear beside him. A cloud rolls in, and a voice from heaven says, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." It is strange, it is cosmic, it is by no means subtle. And perhaps, at its simplest, it can be said that, if nothing else, the Transfiguration is a grand chance to see the divine differently. The Transfiguration is a story of grandeur, yes, but it is also one of before and after. It is the Gospel of Matthew's retelling that perhaps best tips us off to the before and afterness of this story. It does so simply by the way it starts, with those few words, "after 6 days." 6 days after what? Well, if we look back just one chapter prior to Matthew 16, we'll see that a few things happen before this mountaintop moment occurs. First, a growing crowd of people are gathering, and they want Jesus to perform miracles to prove that he is the Messiah. But in this moment, he's more interested in knowing what the disciples, those closest to him, think, rather than in appeasing the crowd. So he turns to them and he asks the disciples, "Who do you say I am?" And Peter replies, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And then, knowing that the disciples affirm all of who he is, Jesus lets them in on all of what's to come. He gathers them close and tells them about the suffering that he anticipates enduring in the not far off future. He tells them about how he will eventually die at the hands of the state. And then Peter, in what sounds like a mixture of surprise and rage and fear, turns to Jesus and says to him, "God forbid it. This must never happen to you." The disciples are horrified, can't imagine what's to come, refuse to accept it. And then the chapter ends. We're left with narrative silence until the story picks back up here, with Jesus and his light that transforms from within, with the Transfiguration event, with the disciples seeing the divine in a new way and saying, "It is good to be here, God." That's a lot to happen in less than a week's time. I can't help but wonder how they got there, from point A to point B. I find myself wondering what those 6 days were like, how they moved from terror at the thought of suffering to hear on a mountaintop saying, "It is good to be here, God." What happened in those 6 days? What happened in those 6 days just after Jesus, the one they called Messiah, the one they hoped would deliver them from the unjust world they found themselves within, told them that he too would suffer at the hands of an unjust and oppressive state? I wish that we got more detail here, more information about how they came to terms with the difficulty of what Jesus and they were about to face. I wish the text said more about how reckoning with the contours of grief changed them. But we do know that it changed them. Because after 6 days of sitting with the hard, honest truth of what's to come, these disciples are given the chance to see God differently. I want that too. For me, for you, for us, to be able to look out into the world and see the divine in new places and new ways. But this is a story of before and after, remember? The only way out, the only way to after is through the in-between. Journey with me through the in-between. After is a word many of us want right now. After the season that has tightened everyone's shoulders, after the difficult phone call with a loved one, after this next election cycle is over, after the headlines that make you set your phone down and stare at the wall because your body is trying to decide whether it can take one more thing. After. In this time, it is easy to yearn for a mountaintop moment where the light makes things newly and abundantly clear, just a moment where, like the disciples, we can say with full sincerity, "It is good to be here, God." But with a tiny little prepositional phrase, the Gospel of Matthew refuses to hand us the after without reminding us to tell the truth about before. The text makes us feel time. It invites us to walk through the 6 days. And I think that is not an accident, because many of us are living inside something like those 6 days right now. Not a neat numbered week, no, nothing about this moment feels neat, but in that same in-between space. That in-between space where hard truths have already been spoken, and yet the transformation we long for has not yet arrived. A space where we know too much to go back to an old innocence, but where we are still trying to figure out the best way to live forward with courage. In Matthew, when Jesus says it plainly, "I will suffer, I will be handed over to the state, and I will die there," ever so understandably, Peter replies, trying to shut it down, saying, "God forbid, this cannot happen." And in that response, there is perhaps not only fear, but grief. A grief in realizing that the world is far more brutal than he wanted to believe. A grief in learning that even Jesus, the one he just called Son of God, is not exempt from what the empire can do to vulnerable bodies. Perhaps some of us are holding that more complicated type of grief too. Not over the idea that suffering exists. No, we have long known that. But that suffering will touch what we love. That it might reach the people we thought were safe and the futures we once thought were squarely guaranteed. There is a grief with that. A grief that comes with confronting the hard truth that the systems we were taught to trust are not equally invested in everyone's dignity. A grief that comes with confronting the even harder truth, that even we can be tempted to protect ourselves by closing in, numbing out, and turning away. But perhaps it is good to feel it. To let us feel such things, to let us be transformed by heartbreaking honesty, to live in the 6 days. This is not a failure. This is what it looks like when the old picture of God and the old picture of our world just can't hold anymore. And here is what I can't stop thinking about. The disciples do not get a new vision of God instead of the hard truth. They get a new vision of God after sitting with the hard truth. They get a new vision of God when they stay with the difficult reality long enough that their eyes are able to see something more. I wonder then, if part of the spiritual life, part of us responding faithfully to this moment we find ourselves in, is developing the courage to be honest about what is real. Because after 6 days of sitting with the hard truth, here is the miracle. They go up a mountain and they see a light. Not a light that erases suffering, but one that reveals what suffering could never cancel. That when hardship is to come, God is still there, showing up in surprising ways and calling their children beloved. So perhaps the transfiguration event, albeit weird, albeit confusing, is another one of God's many ways of saying, do not mistake darkness for the whole story. There is a light that comes with the far side of honesty. Because when the disciples finally see Jesus shining, it is not a different person, a different Jesus. It is the same one who spoke to them about hardship just 6 days prior. The same one who told them the truth, the same one who refused denial. Maybe what changes is not only Jesus' appearance, but also the disciples' sight. I wonder if that is possible for us too. If we are willing to tell the truth about what is real, about our grief, about injustice in the world, about fear, how might our vision widen? What do we need to face in order to see things more clearly? Where have we been saying even quietly, God forbid it, while looking away? What reality have we resisted because it unsettles our sense of safety? What grief have we kept tidy? Because we are not sure what would happen if we let it move through us. Sometimes, the way we come to see God more fully is by looking at what we have refused to see and doing it together. Not because in and of itself pain is holy or suffering is good, but because denial shrinks us. And honesty, however hard, can make us spacious enough to recognize the light when it appears. So here is what I hope you carry with you. If you are in a 6-day stretch right now, if your shoulders have been tight for weeks, if you are quietly saying, God forbid it, about something unfolding in your life or in our world, you are not failing at faith. You are not behind. You may be standing exactly where the disciples stood. In the 6 days, between before and after, between the hard truth and the shining light. And the promise of this strange, confusing mountaintop story is not that the hard truth disappears, it's that it is not the whole story. The shining light might not come before the truth, but it does come, and it is the same Jesus there too. The same Jesus in the valley, the same Jesus on the mountain, the same Jesus walking back down with you. So may you tell the truth. Climb the mountain when you can. Gain a view of reality bigger than what you can see from the valley floor. May you have the courage to live honestly inside your own 6 days, no matter how long they may last. And may you have the openness to recognize when the light comes. May we do it all together. Thanks be to God and amen.